W's Weekly. This week, some very special guests on Open Air. Pepino D'Agostino and Mark Teichholz of the Pacific Guitar Ensemble will be performing live in studio. Pianist David Fry will discuss his appearance with the San Francisco Symphony this week. Phelan Wang talks about her dance project at ODC. And comedian Bill Santiago offers his latest take on the forthcoming election. Do stay with us. And our first very special guests on this edition of Open Air happens to be the gentleman who wrote the theme to Open Air, and that's Pepino D'Agostino. He's here with Mark Teichholz of the Pacific Guitar Ensemble. Gentlemen, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you. Hi.
Thank you for having us.
Pepino, you wrote the music to Open Air. Tell us about how that happened.
Well, I wrote that piece probably, I don't know, maybe 28 years ago, and I met Alan 25 years ago, when I first came here. My English was very poor. I'm surprised that he could understand me at all.
Still can't understand you.
But I remember meeting Alan at the Festa Italiana in San Francisco, and I was playing there, and he came to say hello to me, and that's how we met. We became friends, and it's been a big, you know, Alan supported music in general, but also my music. And he liked that guitar theme, and he decided to use it for Open Air. I could have never thought that he was going to use it for forever. Basically, it's been, what, 25 years? I'm very honored about that.
Well, I have no intention of replacing it, so it's going to live on for many years,
you.
I think.
Thank you so much.
Sure. So let's talk about the Pacific Guitar Ensemble. How did the organization start? This is Mark Teichholz with us.
Hi.
Hi. So
the Pacific Guitar Ensemble is the brainchild of Pepino and David Tannenbaum, who is a great classical guitarist and is the chairman of the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. And Pepino and David played in a similar kind of group in Europe, which brought a lot of different guitarists together. And they enjoyed it a lot, and the group was very successful. And they wanted to do something in the States that was similar. So they asked other members of the San Francisco Conservatory faculty. I'm one of those. Larry Ferrara is another. And then we got some of the best alumni from the school to join us. So they're young guitarists. And there's 8 of us in all. And the fun of it is we have steel string, we've got classical guitar, sometimes we use electric guitar, we've got a Baroque guitar, we have oud. So we have lots of different plucked sounds, and as a result we can do a lot of different interesting repertoire.
So you're not always playing as 8 members, sometimes it's a smaller group, but there are times when the full 8 are on stage performing together.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's always fun, you know, to play and look at each other and look at the audience when we play and establish a connection with the audience through the music. It's really a unique group. And, you know, we just finished our very first CD entitled Begin that came out just a week ago on GSP, Guitar Solo Publishing Recording, which is a label, prestigious label here in San Francisco. And you know, we're having a tour here in Northern California, and we're very excited to play this music for our audiences.
The tour is quite extensive. If you go to PacificGuitarEnsemble.com, you can learn more about the ensemble and their tour. It looks like your next performance is going to be tonight at the Throckmorton Theater in Mill Valley, and then on the 26th in Winters, California. From there, you're back here to the Green Room here in San Francisco, and then on November 11th at the Carriage House Theater and Montalvo Arts Center in Saratoga.
Yeah, thank you. We played already two other concerts, and they went pretty well. You know, it's kind of a... It's challenging to play this music. The repertoire, it's interesting. It goes from Bach to original music. One piece was written for us by the wonderful legendary guitarist Sergio Saad, which also teaches at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. So it's a wide repertoire, and you know, it's quite challenging for us to play, but it's also very fun.
Listeners right now to Open Air can't see this, obviously, because we're on radio, but these gentlemen are balancing their guitars on their knee, and we're going to be thrilled to hear some live music now from two members of the Pacific Guitar Ensemble. We'll let you reset your microphone, and we'll hear some music in just a moment.
Yeah, and I would like to say that, I would like for Mark to introduce the piece, but also I would like to say that we would like to dedicate this piece to the memory of the wonderful Alan Farley.
So Pepino and I are going to do something that has absolutely nothing to do with the Pacific Guitar Ensemble, but it's a lovely piece. It's a movement from a Vivaldi lute concerto, and I'll be the lute player, pretend to play the lute, even though it's a guitar, and then Pepino is going to kind of improvise an orchestral part around it.
That's Mark Tatials, and we'll be performing with Pepino D'Agostino live in our studios here on KALW. Music of Johann Sebastian Bach, dedicated to Alan Farley.
Vivaldi.
I'm sorry. Vivaldi. It's still dedicated to Alan, and I'm sure he's listening, and he's scolding me for back announcing the piece. Sorry,
it's
Alan.
Okay, it's okay.
Beautiful playing, by the way.
Thank you.
Really, thank you. Mark, I'm looking at your guitar, and I've never seen a guitar. You know, we all know that there's always a I guess they call it the rose... hole, or what do they call it, the F hole?
What is this?
La Rosetta.
The Rosetta is what, yeah.
Of course, it's La Rosetta. I've never seen a guitar that also has a hole up on the top and side of it. Does that add some extra resonance? Is something you discovered a special way of playing? Or?
This guitar was made by a luthier who lives in Boston. His name is Stephen Connor. And I don't know if he invented this idea of having a hole that's on the side of the guitar, but it's kind of a cheap monitor, you might say. Classical guitarists are perpetually insecure that they're never loud enough. And so this gives me the illusion that I'm playing louder than I really am, and it makes me feel strong.
It's got to be your own mind, because the sound comes up.
Yes, I can hear more.
And Peppino, what kind of a guitar are you playing?
This is a steel string guitar that I actually designed and is in production, and people can actually buy this guitar in music stores. It's the Peppino D'Agostino signature model made by Robert Godin, luthier Robert Godin in Montreal, Canada.
What makes it unique?
Is the best acoustic guitar you can buy. Well, it's one thing that is different from other acoustic guitars is that the neck is quite is wider than usual than typical steel string guitars. Also, the pickup system is quite unique, and because there's a condenser microphone inside the guitar and also a subtle transducer under the strings.
I noticed on the side there are some controls there as well. Built
in control for EQ, and it's really a wonderful guitar to play live on stage.
And so it can be instantly plugged into a system rather than some sort of a mount on top of the guitar for amplification.
Exactly.
Nice, very nice. Peppino, I understand in addition to composing the theme to Open Air, you are also a writer of some other music that we're going to hear.
Yeah, I'm glad that we'll be able to play some of the music from our CD with the Pacific Guitar Ensemble. This piece is a piece that I wrote originally for solo guitar, and then I arranged for the ensemble with a little help from David Tannenbaum in the arrangement. But this piece is entitled Jump Rope, and this is one of the pieces that we'll be playing live during our upcoming tour.
Let's have a listen. Jump Rope by Peppino D'Agostino on Open Air. Thank you. Jump Rope, written in 2010 by my guest Peppino D'Agostino, and we heard the Pacific Guitar Ensemble performing that work on their CD called The Pacific Guitar Ensemble Begin on GSP Recordings. Peppino, what a wonderful piece.
Thank you. It's kind of fun. You know, it's kind of the encore, or actually we play that in the beginning of the second set, but it's kind of uplifting and fun.
What is it about the music of Johann Sebastian Bach that makes it ideal for the guitar? He obviously didn't write for guitar. Where does the guitar fit into Bach?
Well, I think Bach is almost indestructible, first of all. Bach transcribed his own music for all sorts of combinations. I mean, you've heard it on Moog synthesizer, you've heard it on the saw. I think you can do almost anything to Bach, and he holds up. And part of the reason is that his music is so structurally intact. It has this counterpoint and structure, so that no matter what kind of tone produces the sound, you always hear the counterpoint and the structure. So Bach wrote his music to endure that way. And well, I don't know if the guitar. I mean, you'll have to decide for yourself if you think the guitar brings something special to it. But I think the clarity of the attack and the sweetness of the tone. You know, for example, we play a lot of the violin and cello music on guitar, and with the bowed instruments, you have to kind of break the chords, and with the guitar, you can just play them all at once. So it has some advantages, and of course, you know, we think the guitar is the best instrument in the world. So.
Well, as a flutist, I don't know. I'm going to have to.
We'll fight outside.
I might defer. Actually, I like the guitar myself. Well, one of the pieces that is ideally suited for guitar and a guitar transcription are the Bach Brandenburg Concertos,
right.
One of which is on the CD that we previously mentioned. We're going to hear the last movement of the Bach Brandenburg Concerto No. 6,
right.
BWV 1051. This is the Pacific Guitar Ensemble performing. The final movement of the Bach Brandenburg Concerto No. 6, BWV 1051, the Pacific Guitar Ensemble, with featured soloist Michael Bautista and, Mark Teicholz, who is one of my guests, along with Peppino D'Agostino here in the studio at KLW. Beautiful playing, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And especially on the solo work, Mark.
Thank you. Michael and I always argue about who's drowning out the other one, so... we're competitive.
You guys did a wonderful job.
You can hear this Bach concerto as well as the work we heard earlier, Peppino's work Jump Rope, at the Pacific Guitar Ensemble's concerts, which happen one tonight is at the Throckmorton Theater in Mill Valley at 8 o'clock. Tomorrow they jump up, I guess, up to Winters at the Palms Playhouse. On the 27th, it's back to the Green Room here in San Francisco. And on November 11th, the Carriage House at Montalvo Arts Center in Saratoga. More information about these concerts of the Pacific Guitar Ensemble at their website, pacificguitarensemble.com. Peppino, Mark, thank you for spending some time with us today on Open Air.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Peppino, before we say goodbye to you, though, as you know, Alan Farley was a great fan of your music.
Thank you. We use it
as our opening theme, and we also use it for what we call the interstitial music, as we usher you out of the studio and get the next person on the mic for Open Air. What is the work that is, what did you call this interstitial music?
That song, it's a duet, and it's called Song for Carol. Carol is a good friend of mine. She lives in Michigan. And we're still good friends, and it's a very romantic piece, and I thank you for using my music. I appreciate it very much.
Peppino, Mark, thanks again for being here.
Thank you.
Listening to Open Air here on local public radio, KALW San Francisco. Good afternoon. I'm David LaTulipe, your host for this program of arts and culturally related events, all things culturally considered, I like to call it. My next guest is Feline Wang, who is here to talk about her production at the ODC Theater here in San Francisco. Good afternoon, Feline.
Hi.
So nice for you to take some time. This program that you're doing is called Seeking Resolve, and it's of several choreographers' works. Could you share with us what your aspect of the production is?
We have brought together four different choreographers for this year's production, and the mission for the company is to build a cross-cultural bridge between U.S. and China vis-a-vis the performing arts. So for this year's bill, I invited two choreographers from the U.S. and two choreographers from China to join me, and we created work on my company underneath the awning of the same theme, Seeking Resolve.
The other choreographers that are involved from the U.S. are Charles Anderson and Scott Putman. How did you become associated with their works?
They have been longtime friends of mine, and it was actually this evening of work came together over several years of choreographers and I seeing them move in similar yet parallel lines of choreographic development as I. And they had, each choreographer had spent significant amounts of time in a country outside of their homeland. For example, Charles has done significant research and work in West Africa, and Scott Putman has spent time in Italy and so forth.
Very nice. And from China, we have Sunny Shen and Liu Yifeng.
Yes.
Could you share with us how some of the music was chosen for these dances?
For Sunny Shen, he has choreographed a piece called Independence Day, and he chose the work of Wagner for his music. His piece is, I would say it's very dramatic, and so, and it also has a storyline, so it has ballet elements to it, and I think that's what drove his music selection. For the other pieces and the choreographers, their pieces are a bit shorter, and Charles Anderson is using a piece of music by Moby, and Liu Yifeng is using an artist from France called Lush Michanel. And I am using music from various composers, kind of across the board. But I really like to draw from other Chinese-American singer-songwriters. And so for the show, we are premiering a new work called Blend B, and that utilizes the original music of a Chinese-American artist named Cynthia Lin, and her song is called Microscope.
It sounds like a lovely evening of dance and in a fantastic space, ODC Theater. I have not been in their theater either in its old entity or the new. Could you tell us something about the ODC Theater now?
Well, I should say that we are actually performing in their Studio B space, uh-huh. which is upstairs in the new Dance Commons, and it is beautiful. The Studio B runs as a dance studio during the day, but in the evening they have curtains and they have benches that you pull out, and it creates this very prestigious and intimate environment in which to, you know, get to know our audiences and to just establish our presence more in San Francisco.
Well, you can learn more about the dance, I like to say dance concert, because it's certainly applicable for choreography that's going on. Seeking Resolve. It's a fifth anniversary home season at ODC, and for Phelan Wang, my guest, she is not only one of the choreographers represented, but is actually presenting this performance. The performances are on the 26th of October, which is tomorrow evening at 8:30, Saturday and Sunday at 8 o'clock, and this is in the ODC Studio B. ODC Studios are on Shotwell Street in San Francisco. And tickets may be purchased through odcdance.org. Phelan, thanks so much for taking a little bit of time today on Open Air.
No problem.
And we hope to see some of our listeners at the Seeking Resolve with these special choreographers from the U.S. and from China. I'm David LaTulipe. Still to come on Open Air, we'll be hearing from comedian Bill Santiago and shortly David Fry, who is performing with the San Francisco Symphony. Stay tuned to Open Air and KLW. very pleased to welcome to the studios now David Fry, who will be performing with the San Francisco Symphony this weekend in music of Mozart. David, welcome to KLW.
Thank you very much.
So this marks a return to you with the San Francisco Symphony. You were here a couple years ago, I understand.
Yes, I was here to play the Beethoven's second piano concerto with Christoph Eschenbach. Yes.
Tell me a little bit about your background in terms of your early studying.
Well, it's quite simple. I don't know in America, but in Europe, it's quite usual to start very young to study an instrument, not to become a professional musician, but just to have also the knowledge of music and to enjoy, you know, the fact to have a direct relationship to music. So it was the case in my family. My parents were not musicians, but they were music lovers, and they decided that my brother and I should start to study music at the age of four. And my brother stopped when he was a teenager, and I continued because I thought that I had something to do with it, not only to enjoy music, but also to really dedicate my life to it.
When did that become your overriding focus then? Was it while you were still in school?
You know, it's something that is progressive. It's not something that you are aware just one day you think I want to become a musician. It's something that there are a lot of different steps in this decision, and you have to be mature enough to say I want to become a musician with all the things that it supposes in mind. Because if you say it and you are 10 years old, of course it's important because still you have this will, and it's something essential. But after that, when you are a teenager, when you are a young adult, there are other steps and other decisions that are made with a clearer conscience of what it is, what it supposes, and all the difficulties you have to face.
So there are obviously many, many practice hours involved in a practice room,
of course,
solitary
yes.
time together. So you're beginning to make a career for yourself. You were born in 1981, so you've still got a very, we hope, a very long and lucrative career ahead of you. But what was the moment where it said, this is going to be my life, and now I actually have a career, I'm being asked to perform further on?
I could say that my career really began after the prize I got at the Montreal Piano Competition in Canada. So then I really started to, you know, what does it mean to be a professional musician? It means that you can live with the money you earn with your concerts. And so, you know, basically it's that. But before this, there is this deep feeling that you have to spend your whole life with music, and it's more important than the money side, of course.
Your style has been compared to a young Glenn Gould, in that you kind of there's an element of showmanship involved with your performing, in terms of a little bit more interactive with the audience, maybe with the orchestra as you're rehearsing, as well as performing.
To be honest, I am always surprised to listen to what people could say about it, because it's really not the feeling I have myself. First, even if I admire Glenn Gould, and he was a very strong personality, an important pianist, but something really unique. And I never tried to imitate Glenn Gould, and I think it would have been a big, big mistake to imitate somebody like that. So
what's coming out is more organic to your personality is coming out. than any sort of intentional limitation, of course.
Yes, but even it's the if I have some models, the Glenn Gould is not part of them, in fact. Uh-huh. And the showman thing you say, it's also something that I don't feel, because it's just my
your natural expressiveness.
Natural expressivity that I express like that. But you know, the more I grow up, maybe the more I try to control these things, because it's not something that I want. It's just something that just escape from me.
Well, the remaining concerts with the San Francisco Symphony are Friday at 8 and then Sunday at 2. This is a concert that also includes the prelude to Act 1 of Lohengrin of Wagner and Brahms' Fourth Symphony. And you're performing the Piano Concerto No. 22 of Mozart. This concert was originally supposed to be conducted by Jaap van Zweden, and it is now being conducted by Asher Fish. What's wonderful is that you made a recording with the Mozart Piano Concerto 22, as well as the 25th Piano Concerto with van Zweden, and that's going to be one of the pieces you're performing here. So I'm wondering what it's like to having shift gears away from someone that you knew so well, that you recorded this work with, and now I understand this is the first time you're working under Asher Fish, and even though you've played with the San Francisco Symphony before, this is a different experience. So is this refreshing for you, or are you a little bit nervous about the result of this unfamiliar conductor to you?
You know, anyway, even if you know, if you knew before the conductor, even if you knew before the orchestra, even if you played before the piece, every concert is a new challenge. There is nothing that supposes that it's easier. It's never easier with music. And if it's easier, it means that there is a problem. Each concert has to be like the first one or the last one, but something special. I never consider concerts like that. You know, for me, it's always something new and fresh, I hope. I'm not this kind of artist who can repeat something. I always do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... Yeah, yes?
In Mozart's day, let's talk a little about any cadenzas that might be happening in these concerti.
Yeah.
In the concerto number 22. Is that a Mozart cadenza, or are you adding to this yourself, or something that you created?
Mozart didn't write any cadenzas for this concerto. For example, he did for the next one, the number 23, very, very famous one, but not for this one. And there are a lot of things that should be added by the pianist, in fact. A lot of small and big cadences.
And does that vary from performance to performance for you, or have you established in your mind what you're going to do for your cadenza and kind of stick to it?
No, I'm not this kind of artist who really improvise. I like improvisation in the way that it's you have to rediscover the work at every concert, but it's not something that is connected with the fact that I change notes or rhythms. It's yes, there is a quite a strict structure in my interpretations, but around this you can find a lot of freedom, I think. Yes.
Well, I wish you the best of luck for these remaining performances with the San Francisco Symphony.
Thank you very much.
And we hope you'll stop by again sometime.
Thank you.
We're going to hear, you can hear the Piano Concerto No. 22 on CD from Virgin Classics or live in person with the San Francisco Symphony. If you're listening now during open air, there's a concert that starts at 2 this afternoon, and then Friday evening at 8, and Sunday afternoon there's a matinee at 2 o'clock. The program includes music of Wagner and Brahms as well. Piano Concerto No. 22 of Mozart on the program with David Frey. And we're going to hear now from his Virgin Classics CD the finale of the Piano Concerto No. 25, Kerschel 503 in C major. The artist David Frey at the piano, and Jaap van Zweden conducting the Philharmonia Orchestra on open air. That's pianist David Fry, who will be performing with the San Francisco Symphony actually in about 12 minutes here in San Francisco at Davies Symphony Hall. Another matinee will be taking place on Sunday at 2 o'clock, and an evening performance with the San Francisco Symphony at Asher Fish conducting tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Information at sfsymphony.org. I thank David once again for taking some time out of his rehearsing schedule to spend some time with me here on Open Air. Another guest today on Open Air is comedian Bill Santiago, who has been heard on Comedy Central, CNN, mentioned on the Huffington Post, no doubt with a clip or two. Bill, thank you for stopping into the studios here at KLW.
My pleasure for opening up that door. I'm glad to be in the studio with you. How are you today?
I'm excellent, thank you. You've got an interesting show coming up at La Peña, which is on Shattuck Avenue in Berkeley, called My Fellow Republicans, 47% Hilarious.
Yes, that's right. I had to add the 47% Hilarious so people would know that it's not an actual gathering of Republicans. Although, of course, they're welcome. Matter of fact, I'd like them in the audience to have to face what I'm about to do more than anybody else.
I was gonna say, my question will be with them. Will there be 53% that will not be amused at all?
That's a toss-up. Yeah, we'll see if we can get them too. But I'm guaranteeing 47% hilarity, 47% laughs. Yeah.
Well, this election season has been ripe for comedians. You must be eternally grateful for election years.
Oh yeah, I'm going to be sorry to see it over on November 6th. But yeah, we're having fun. You know, I'm having a lot of fun with the language. First of all, I'm doing the show because they say that the last show that I did was all about religion, which is the opiate of the masses, and I want to do one about politics, which is the bath salts of the of the masses. Just gets you so angry you want to go out and eat somebody's face off, you know. And so this will be a very cathartic to get that kind of aggression out of your system.
Well, let's start with something that I'm sure you can elaborate on. Is like how ridiculously close the polls are in this election.
Yeah, I can't believe it. They spent like $2 billion on this campaign so far, right? And between the two parties, that's at minimum. That's without counting what they call the dark money. I don't even know what the hell that is, but apparently there's a lot of dark money floating around.
I think it's from various
some sort of nefarious secret shadow packs, super packs, but all that money to change the mind of some mythical undecided voter. I have no idea if this exists. Who is this undecided? You're literally spending all that money to change the mind of someone who probably does not.
When they should just go to school and give that money directly to the professors at the Electoral College. Right?
Well, there's so many other things that you can do with that money. I mean, it's kind of a mockery of the fact that none of this is being done with the voters in mind, because that money could be used in such a better way.
What did you think of the recent debates? I mean, I thought Barack really did a home run for a couple of them, but you turn into something like Fox News and it's like, oh, he was horrible. He didn't treat Romney with respect. Blah, blah, blah. What did you think of the debate?
Well, first of all, okay, there was quite an arc between the three of them, right? The first one, he completely whiffed. It was so disappointing. Everybody, I got an email right after that debate from Barack Obama saying, I hope I made you proud. And I was like, what? This must have been pre-programmed. You didn't make anybody proud. Not even your wife on your anniversary night is proud of what just happened out there. You just blew it big time, you know? And later on, I was looking at the video of him, and it occurred to me that, you know, it was like watching someone who had felt that he could be more helpful from a spiritual plane, so that he allowed himself to be crucified, you know? And then in the second debate, apparently he switched debating sparring partners because he seemed to do a little bit better. And by the third one, he nailed it. He came out and you know,
that
was very...
That first one, it wasn't Obama. It was, oh, brother, where art thou?
It was Flojo Obama. I don't know if you know the Spanish, but that's exactly what it is.
Can we say that on the air?
Flojo, yeah, that's not a problem.
Okay,
cojones, that's a problem, but we won't go into that. But yeah, by the third one, that's it. He came out cojones out, was very in your face. He didn't let anything get by him. And whatever Romney said, he was ready for it. Nope, that's not true. Nope, I'm afraid not. Nope, that's not what you said. Even when they were in agreement, he was like, well, you may have agreed now, but didn't agree then.
Whereas that first debate, he just rolled over.
Yeah,
by
the third time, I mean, it was just such a beautiful resolution. Of course, nobody was watching because the game was on. And that actually reminded me of what you said about Fox, how obviously it's biased, but
it's fair and balanced, isn't it?
Just how skewed their perspective is, you know, between what you actually saw and what they're trying to tell you happened. You know, if they had been doing the commentary for the Giants, if the Giants had been a debate team, and they had knocked out of the ballpark like they did with the playoffs, or even you know, last night, you could have turned to Fox News, and if they had been the Democrats, they would have been like, "Boy, that Democratic Giants team just blew it, just terrible, shameful, shameful." Obviously, they are going to be the losers in this. So.
It's extraordinary to me how divided this country is, though, about such fundamental beliefs, and it's
it has been forever. You know, and the two party system lends itself to that. It's always, at least from now on, it's always going to be pretty.
But there's
much
always
split.
Been a reaching across the aisle, whether it was Reagan and Tip O'Neill, or whether it was Johnson and
well, I don't see that ever happening again. You know, it's
sad.
Just that you look at the map, you talk to the people, and it's split right down the middle.
Okay,
and it's kind of ridiculous.
I'll give you a topic, and you can give me a riff.
Is this going to be a lot of pressure?
Yeah.
Vice president. Oh, I got
vice. There you go. Vice president. Talk to me about the vice presidential picks.
Well, Biden, the gaffe that keeps on giving. You know, everyone was making fun of his, like, his grinning and his smile and saying he was snide and mockery. But look, that's the way that you smile right after you get a new pair of dentures. I know that. My grandmother just got a new pair.
How else do you respond?
Smiling the same way.
How else do you respond to Eddie Munster? I mean, how else can you do that? You
know? Yeah, he's got the... he's got that look nailed down. And, you know, he's lying about this is a guy who lied about his marathon time, which, by the way, he walked back. Are you familiar with the terminology walking back and doubling down?
Yes.
Which is all over the pundit sphere.
I'm sure it's totally justified, though, right?
He had to walk it back. Anyway, he should have run it back. But here's
he couldn't run it back. not
as fast as he said, right? That's the whole thing. And that terminology has got me, I'm just obsessed with it lately. And let me get you up to speed on it, okay? So walking back is a form of backpedaling. Are you following? In response to pushback that behooves you to back down, although you really don't want to take it entirely back. Doubling down is a refusal to back down, whatever the backlash, even onto a smackdown in hopes that your critics will back off on the double. But it gets a lot trickier than that, because sometimes someone will only pretend to walk back when actually they're just doubling back to walk it forward on the down low.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, that's we're going to be getting into all of that stuff.
Wide stance and all, no doubt.
Anyone at the show who is not happy with what I'm saying, no problem, just let me know, and I will either walk it back or double down.
Or you can become part of the 47% hilarious audience at La Peña this weekend. The show is called My Fellow Republicans. Fascinating picture on the on your poster. It looks like Mr. Romney in a clown makeup get up there. Tell him.
Oh, it's a fabulous poster. Yeah, a friend of mine in Indiana.
Share with us what's going to happen on the show.
Okay, so you're familiar with the 47% leaked video, right? And I love how he was never more candid than he was when apparently he didn't know that it was being videotaped and speaking to
a
close-knit group of fundraisers were all on his side, you know? And he finally became human when he became draconian, right? I mean, that was him in his element. And I loved, first of all, how long that speech was. They were able to put the whole thing out there. And that he was in his mode the entire time. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to do a mock speech along those sorts of lines based on exactly what Romney's actually thinking and put it out there as the next leaked speech. And so that will be the core of this show when people come on Friday or Saturday to My Fellow Republicans. By the way, anyone who shows up with Romney Ryan button on their clothing will get in for free.
Wow, okay, there you have it.
I know for a fact you can't find one in San Francisco.
The performances are Friday, October 26th, and Saturday, the 27th, at La Peña on Shattuck Avenue. You can find information for these performances and learn more about Bill at lapena.org. That's lapena.org. And Bill, I understand you're looking for a pianist.
Oh, that's right.
Speaking of David Fry, who's just my guest.
Thank you so much. Yeah, so, you know, the show's, I'm putting it together as we speak, and there's one little thing that I want to do, which is a song parody of that song, I'm looking for it here on my, I know what it is, but I'm looking for it on my laptop. I was going to sing it. Anyway, it's the Groucho Marx song, Lydia, Olydia. Lydia the Tattoo Lady, and I wrote a Libya, Oh Libya song parody to it. And I'm looking for someone, a piano player out there who can actually do show tunes to back me up on it, because I thought I'd have one and I don't.
Well, so, where should they send their resumes?
Bill, just contact me, Bill at BillSantiago.com.
Fantastic. Bill, I'm so glad that you could take a little bit of time with us today on Open Air.
Hey, my pleasure.
Once again, go to lapena.org to learn more about Bill's upcoming performances.
Oh, wait, and the opening act, I have to mention this, Danny Chirago of the Fuxedos. He's an anarchist, and he's going to start off the show with a big bang. Come on and check it out.
Fantastic. Thanks, Bill.
Bye-bye.
I'm David LaTulipe, and this has been Open Air on KLW.